You're listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. Interesting conversations about innovation, economics, culture, and history for the independent thinkers and curious minds. I'm your host, Alex Wolf.
Welcome to this episode of the Alex Wolf Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm really excited about this episode in particular because I'm going to be talking about quite a controversial opinion that I have about how important the role of the homemaker is to society and it having a more significant role than, you know, a tech CEO or a politician, or the roles that we typically tend to give a lot of prestige to or put on a pedestal. So I cannot begin the story without talking about my nonna. Nonna is how you say grandma in Italian. And if you don't know, I am half black, half Italian, and my father is the Italian one. And so I was raised with a lot of Italian culture and values and things of that nature. And so this all started because I realized I am more traditional than I thought. And when I say traditional, what I mean is that I really value traditions. I think that they preserve wisdom, they preserve survival skills, they preserve meaning and reasons to make life worth living. And I think they make life feel more human and less cold, which I, as you know, feel like our mainstream culture is pretty cold right now. It's very technologically, quote unquote, advanced and focused. And so traditions offer an opportunity to bring more humanity into our lives. And so I realized that I was more traditional than I thought after my nonna had passed away a few years ago. And it was this really interesting journey of self-exploration that turned into an anthropological exploration about this role of a homemaker in a society. So my nonna raised me for a big chunk of my childhood. My dad was in law school and when I was like 1 or 2 years old. And so it was also the time that my parents were getting divorced. And so my dad needed support in the home to basically help raise me and keep food on the table. As far as making the food, my dad was working, so he was providing, but you need someone in there to cook the food, right? And so my nonna played that role, and I had a very close relationship with her because we would spend every day together, and obviously those are very formative years of life. And so I say all that to say that we were very close. So she was a very typical grandma, right? In the sense that she was a housewife for most of her life. She cooked and cleaned religiously. Like, no one had to ask her. No one had to remind her. It was just a part of her duty, she felt. She just did it. It was not a question. And you would just assume that if she was there, then there would be food there and that the house would be clean. There would be clean sheets and clean towels, which is something that I took advantage of as a kid. And I just kind of thought that was the expectation. Of course, you get to be an adult and you're like, oh my God, someone has to do all this shit. That was, you know, she was a typical grandma in that sense. And I'm sure maybe you have a grandma or you have someone in your life who is older and who has always been associated with having food around when they are around, which is a very comforting and stereotypical vision of the grandma. So the other thing that made her a very typical grandma is that she would say these very weirdly outdated sort of euphemisms. She had strong thoughts about how women should act and how men should act. You know, she was always trying to fix my outfits, fix me up, fix my hair, my collars. And she just, you could tell she really cared about what the world would think. And how you should display yourself on the outside. And I think between being a kid and also a teenager, that was all just felt very unnecessary, felt very annoying, felt like, you know, why do you care so much? And I just could not empathize at all with why she cared so much about those things. And as far as her weird, outdated sayings, I would roll my eyes to most of them because they sounded very ignorant and dated. Especially, I was raised to be from my father and my mother, very much raised to be independent, to not care about gender roles, to, you know, not care about being ladylike per se, that those were things that were not important and things that I should not care about. And so when my nana would say things that showed she cared about them, I was just kind of like, all right, grandma, you know, it's a very common thing. I'd be like, oh, okay, all right, nana, like, okay, whatever. So, yeah, it all sounded mostly like bad advice, and I didn't take any of it seriously. So everything changed when she died. And like I said, that was a few years ago, and she also died pretty unexpectedly. We found out she had cancer, I think, around the 3rd/4th stage, so there's very little you can do at that point. And at the time, my great-grandmother was still alive, like alive, you know, kicking and moving. And so in all our minds, we thought, you know, God would go in order. So the idea of my nana dying first was not even like on the radar. It was not a thought. And especially because she took care of herself. She would exercise. She would eat healthy. She, you know, it's just weird, very mysterious how life works. And so that was part of the huge lesson as well when she passed away, is, you know, really valuing the mortality of life and how temporary things are. So that was, I think, one of the most significant turning points in my life, because what I realized is it wasn't just her that died. It was her ways that died with her. It was recipes that died with her. It was mannerisms, right? And as much as I would ignore those traditional beliefs, I realized that I guess I was valuing them from afar, just having them in my ecosystem, because I felt like they were grounding me without realizing. I didn't take the advice to heart, but after she was gone, I realized there wasn't that voice there anymore to say these kind of random traditional things. And I think one of the most profound realizations I had when she passed, and mind you, this was also my first like grieving experience of someone I was close to. So we're having, you know, multiple emotions going on at once. And one of the things that stood out is, wow, when someone passes away, you hear their voice a lot. At least that was my experience. Not like literally, but in just in my head. Like I was realizing that as I was cleaning, I would like remember, I would realize how much I was saying what she would say in my head. So like techniques for like how to clean or how to fold, and you always do it this way, and you always, you know, when you're cooking, you always cut the garlic this way. And so I realized like, wow, this woman has been in my head this whole time. But now that she's passed, that was like illuminated even more. And I realized how much everything I am made up of has been because of these little random things that she would say all the time. And to me, that is such a beautiful relationship to have as a human being, because that is what I call wisdom. And to me, I define wisdom as timeless advice that illuminates from experience. So it is advice and even just acknowledgments of things that you have to experience in order to realize. And she was very intentional, as a mature person develops to be. I feel like as you get older, you become very intentional about what little sayings you give to your grandchildren or your children or just people you care about, because you know that, yeah, I'm going to plant this seed today. She doesn't understand it, but as it grows, it's going to be comforting and, again, illuminating to life. And it's going to show her that I've walked this path. I've been down that road. I know what that feels like. And you're not alone. And this is how you deal with it, I think, is such a very sacred part of human relationships and family and friendships. So that was happening a lot. And I was just like, wow, a lot of my thoughts literally, I mean, just everything, how to clean everything, how to talk to people, how to ask for things. I realized how much of that came from her. So, again, that was a huge pivotal point. And then I started to think beyond just my Nana, but the effect of grandmothers and grandfathers on a mass scale, how them passing is going to have, what kind of effect that's going to have on society. Because as you know, I love talking about generational relationships. My grandmother's passing was a huge igniter in getting that going. But I'm looking at it as like, oh, I'm a millennial, and this is sort of the 10-year period where a lot of us are going to lose grandparents. Not all of us. Some of us lose them earlier. Some of us lose them later. But this is like a bulk period. And I really just started to study and research, how is this going to impact society? How is this absence of traditional thoughts and ideas going to impact our daily lives, and what have we preserved? So when I talk about certain behaviors that I think that generally speaking our grandparents have, it might be something like remembering birthdays by heart, calling people on their birthdays. I had a huge one of my Instagram hate list of things was how Facebook kind of replaced taking the responsibility of writing birthdays down and remembering them, because we would get reminded through Facebook when it was our friends' birthdays. And then when a lot of us moved to Instagram doesn't have a birthday feature. And so I noticed how a lot of my peers would like almost post a pre-birthday post, like letting their friends know their birthday's coming, so that they don't feel horrible when their birthday comes and they realize they don't even know when their friends' birthdays are. It's a perfect example of non-human friendly technology, in the sense that who was thinking ahead enough to think, hey, if we integrate this birthday feature into Facebook, how is this going to affect friendships? Because you know, people are not going to write the birthdays down, and a lot of people are going to forget birthdays, and that really hurts. And I think that, again, this was all happening right around the time that my grandma passed. So I was thinking about, like, my grandma remembered everybody's birthday, and she would call, she would send cards. And that was just the expectation, and that level of care and compassion is so refreshing in a time like today. And so I remember calling all my friends and literally asking them when their birthdays were, and I have them in my Google Calendar, and I take pride in being able to prepare to send them gifts when their birthday is here, because that's such a special day and it shouldn't be ruined in the name of a Facebook reminder and the lack of it later on. So those are the type of behaviors. And of course, for my grandma specifically, she was just so great in the kitchen. And she also just really cared about the house being orderly and clean. And I'm going to talk about how those behaviors are looked down upon as far as things we should focus on as adults, specifically as women. It's like, you know, I grew up in a very liberal home outside of my Nana. And when I say liberal, I don't mean politically per se. I just mean philosophically. So basically the idea that gender roles are not grooved in, like they're not a priority, and it's more about seeking new experiences versus preserving old ones. And so my grandma definitely was more of a preserver of traditions, and my parents were more like, oh no, get out there and do those things. And so I always felt like cooking and cleaning were, you know, kind of like beneath me, and that, you know, I'm a quote unquote strong woman, and to be a quote unquote strong woman, you must stay away from any domestic work. So that, I mean, look at my life, right? I ended up going to the fullest and building a freaking huge company and like being ambitious as possible. And so again, when my grandma passed away, it was this pivotal wake up call of like, wait, like, what do I want to do, and how insignificant were those behaviors? And I really, after I started to think about it more, and again, you have to layer in the fact that I'm studying tech philosophy and I'm studying the effects of technology on the home, specifically in relationships. And I'm like, yo, who scammed me out of thinking that cooking was important? Like, who scammed me out of thinking that doing this important work for my own home is not important? And I think that in combination with the grief I was feeling, I just kind of like, I went all in and I changed a lot of my behavior. And I really just that was when I realized, like, oh, I'm more traditional than I thought. Like, I find immense joy out of cooking a pie just to cook a pie. I find immense joy in keeping my house clean. It is what I will prioritize always over, you know, business. It just is for me. And when I start, again, I think I started to think about just the feeling you have when you go to, it could be a grandma's house, it could be a mom's house, but just, it could be a family friend's house, but just someone's house who cares about making that house feel like a home, someone who has a blanket there for you to cuddle up in, someone who's offering you tea. Like, to me, that is the most dignified type of behavior to have, especially in today's society where I feel like the integrity of a home, the energy of a home, because to me, a home is not a place with four walls and a roof over it. A home is an energy, because there's a lot of places with four rooms, four walls and a roof over it that feel like hell, right? That feel cold and nothing like a home. So a home is about the energy you bring to it. And yes, that can be expressed through clean sheets, but it can also just be expressed through listening. It could also be expressed through nurturing people. And I felt like that is the most dignified role to have in a society, because at the end of the day, literally, at the end of the day, where do you go? You go home. What do you need to do at home? You need to restore. You need to rejuvenate. You need to nurture yourself. Why? Because in the morning, you have to wake up and go back out there in the world. And so if your home is not a place of rejuvenation, then you have nowhere to rejuvenate and you're running on E. And it was very simple for me to realize that my nana and even my other grandma and a lot of older people really still cared about the art of homemaking. It is an art. It's more than just a technique. It's more than just a science, because a lot of people think, you know, oh, Alex, what are you telling me? Like, I should love mopping my kitchen floor? Kinda, but that's not really the whole of what I'm saying, because there's a difference between housekeeping and homemaking, right? Housekeeping is cleaning it. It's one portion of it, but homemaking, like, literally that word, it changed for me after my nana passed, because I was like, what is more important than making homes in a civilization? Like, that is what the whole thing is made of. So to make a home is an art. It is a very extremely sophisticated and impressive art, because you have to be sensitive to everything. You have to be sensitive to people's emotions, to the temperature, to the seasons, to what you know, foods are available at the grocer, what can you make. There's a system to keeping things orderly. And if you are an adult, you know what I'm talking about, because now we're in a life stage in which we can appreciate our grandmas and our grandparents in general and how much they did to contribute to this feeling of making a home. So again, I was like, who scammed me? Like, when did that happen? And I think that's what's so beautiful about wisdom, is that it's always in your face, but you won't be able to see it until you have a certain experience. And so for me, that experience was, unfortunately, it was my grandma passing away. And as much as it hurt, I was able to find gratitude in what it illuminated for me, because it kind of added these values to my life that made it way deeper. So, I wanted to talk about this experience I had. So now I'm like super traditional woman now. Like, after that, all this happened, a few years had passed, and for me, homemaking is not even necessarily about having like a spouse or kids. It can be that, of course, but I was being a homemaker just for myself. You know, I was like, I want to do this for me because I love me and I want to make a home for me, because Lord knows I want that for myself. And of course, whoever I live with, I want it for them too. But the point I'm making is, you don't have to wait for, you know, other people to live with you to have those things. So anyway, so here I am, like, super traditional, and it always throws people off, because I guess because I wear Jordans and because I'm kind of like aggressive. But it's what can I say? I'm human. I'm complex. I know you are too. I mean, the idea that just because you wear Jordans, you can't be a homemaker is like, it doesn't even fit in my brain. So anyway, I'm at dinner with friends, and it was a couple, and one of the guy was like, it was a straight couple, and the guy was like, they were talking about like work. I don't know what the hell, how we got here, but he was like, you know, I want my wife to work because I want her to do, she needs to be doing like more important stuff than cooking and cleaning. And of course, like, this is like, you know, 3 years after my nun had passed, and I'm ready. Like, I have my whole opinions about like how that sentence makes no sense in my brain. And I'm like, that's when I realized how traditional I got, because I was like, what's more important than cooking and cleaning your home, your own home? Now, I obviously do not think that you should do this if you don't want to do it, right? I'm not one of those people who think like, you know, you have, no, I think you should, if you want to do that, you can. But it's just, for me, the irony is less in, oh, like, you should do this. The irony for me is like, who tricked you into thinking that the first thing you should do when you become a responsible adult is run out the house and neglect it to go serve a society that is argumentatively like not necessarily serving you, and neglecting your home? And just this idea that he felt like he was doing his woman a favor, maybe that's not what she wanted, you know? So again, I'm not saying like every person should do this. I don't even think it's a gender thing per se. Like, I think just period that homemakers are homemakers. And if you're not making your home, who else is going to make it? Because I'm sorry, you can hire a cleaning person, but they're going to clean the house. They're not going to make a home. Right. So anyway, I was just like, oh my God, I am my grandma. Like, it was that moment, you know how they say, like, you turn into your mom, you turn. And I'm like, I cannot believe I sound like a woman from, I sound like literally an old woman from the 1950s in Italy, which is what my grandma was. So anyway, I feel like we have truly neglected the role of the home so much in this society. And we work towards careers and lifestyles that are specifically designed to run us out of the house. And that's why this year is ironic, because we're all kind of forced to stay here, and now we're realizing how important home is. But I think that, you know, a lot of us are motivated to figure out how to spend as least time as possible in the home, and especially being responsible for the maintenance of it. It's like, well, if I'm going to stay home, then it doesn't necessarily mean you want to do what it takes to routinely keep it feeling homey. So yeah, I mean, it's complex. I know people are going to hear this and they're going to say, Alex thinks that, you know, women should be maids. I never said that at all. Like, not even a little bit. I think it's so much deeper than that. And I also find it really fascinating that, okay, I look at it as like our tech philosophy, right? Our philosophy about what we think technology should do has made us be really classist towards people who do clean homes, because it's our idea that technology, that to do that type of work, because now it's dirty work, right? Like the idea of being the one who's taking care of your home, whether it doesn't have to be the cleaning part, it could be the cooking part, right? Is for a lot of people, like the work that should be beneath you, because the people who have the prestige are the ones who go to corporations and come up with ideas for corporations. And that if you do not know how to do that, then you are considered a low skill worker. And low skill workers are right there with machines, because we build our machines to do what we believe to be low skill work. But I just feel like it's so classist to be like, well, I'm too good to do this because XYZ. So we're going to hire people for that, because just this idea that you think it's something you can hire people out to do. And again, I'm talking about the homemaking part. It's not even in the equation. We think, oh, having the house being clean is the same. And it's just not. So I often say that the home is the most important economic unit of a civilization, because it is through the home that people learn how to love or not learn, right? And how to deal with people so that they can go out into the real world and deal with other people. What do we always say about people we don't like? What do we always say about our exes? We always say they weren't raised right, right? They were raised in a difficult home. They had a difficult upbringing, a difficult home. So I'm saying that not to blame their parents. I'm saying that to show how integral the role of the home is in creating people. People that you have to deal with. People that you have to work with. People that you have to build your life with. And I feel like if you look around, you'll see our current mainstream culture seems almost designed to create difficult homes. Or shells of homes through the neglect and the irresponsibility of our technology. That's what I think. Again, our tech philosophy made housework into quote-unquote dirty work, meaning it's only for machines and it's only for quote-unquote low-skill people. How does that make any sense? How is it not the top of the priority? If it is the source of rejuvenation, of love, of this place you have to go so that you can go out there in the world and actually make something meaningful out there, you know? So, and that's why my last week's episode, I was talking about civilization, because civilization is made up of units. And the units are not necessarily individuals, they're families. And where do families live? Right. So again, we put corporate work on a pedestal, but there's reason to argue that the corporate work is what fragmented the integrity of the home. We can take it there, because a lot of people who do care about homes talk about how media, whether it be certain shows, music, right, infiltrating the home and changing what the idea of a home is and how important it is. When I was doing my research for the presentation I gave about millennials feeling unaligned with their age, every book was talking about how in more traditional cultures, I mean, the home is this impenetrable place of protection. It is protecting the integrity of the people in there and their relationships. Obviously, not all homes are perfect. A lot of homes are broken, even the ones who claim to be so great. But the point is that this is where it starts. If you're mad at your society, well, what are the states of the homes in that society? Whatever that kid comes out at from that home, he's going to take everything he learned and then take it out on the world, whether it be good, bad, whatever. So I don't mess with that. After that, I was like, oh, people want to talk about, oh, I want to make an impact. I want to, you know, sell a million this. I want to be the biggest CEO for this. I want to, I want to contribute, you know, this to society. In my opinion, the best thing you can contribute to this society is a child who has dignity and loves himself or herself. And who's going to do that? Who's going to do that? Is it going to be Elon Musk? Is this your king? You know what I'm saying? And I love Steve Jobs. You know what I mean? Like, I get into the fangirl, fanboy, tech, you know, oh, these people are so cool. They are. But I'm going to tell you who does more important work than Elon Musk, and that's Iyanla Van Zandt. Why? Because she goes to people who come from broken homes and heals them and says, hey, before we start talking about brain chips and going to the moon and going to space, before we start trying to even have a nerve to try to go to some other planet, let's fix your heart. Let's fix your mind. Let's learn how to love. Let's learn how to feel. Let's learn how to actually be human beings before we want to go and be aliens to another planet. I always felt that way. When I watch Iyanla Van Zandt, I say she is doing the most important work. In my opinion, that's a dimension of homemaking. That's home repairing. Because she's coming in and she's saying, look, you're broken. You're broken. So we need to heal you. And I get it. And I cry in each episode. So I'm like, y'all can have fun. Y'all can look at me and think, oh, Alex is baking cookies. What does that have to do for society? Honey, please. Okay? The way food warms people's hearts, people are asleep. I'm like, to me, there's no highest act of love than cooking for people. That's just me. I'm not saying it has to be for everyone, but I will be damned if anyone tries to make me feel like I would be better off doing something else, that something else would be a higher contribution than me taking time out to fix a meal for my family, for myself. And I just, that's where I'm at. You're not about to come in. No, this is the hill I'm dying on. You're not about to come in here and say, oh, well, that's just beneath me. Okay, let it be beneath you. But you're not about to sit here and tell me that this has nothing, that this is not contributing to a greater energy in my society. Yeah, it might look like it doesn't do anything. It might have looked like my Nana wasn't doing anything when she was folding the towels, when she was going to the grocery store. It might have looked like, oh, she's just a housewife and she doesn't do anything. Yeah, that's what it might have looked like with a certain tech philosophy. But I get to look back and be like, Lord have mercy, who would I be? Who would I be if I didn't have those little sensitive details that she cared about? And I'm not, obviously, it's not just my Nana, it was my other grandma and my mother too. And my aunties. And all the other people in my life. My father. You know what I'm saying? This is not just it's not a gender thing to be a loving homemaker. And so, I'm not saying everybody's perfect. I'm not saying everybody did a great job. But I'm saying that, yes, society is made up of the people who care about making a comfortable and safe environment for you to sleep in. Never underestimate that. Without comfort and safety, who are you? Without comfort and safety, you become into a survivalist. Is that how you want to live? Who makes life go from survivalist to human, to not just trying to scrounge around? It is the gentle touch of the homemaker. So you're not about to, nope, you're not about to do it. Not about to make me feel bad from cooking them cookies. You're not ever. And I'm sad that I had to learn through the death of my grandmother. I wish I saw this when she was alive. You know, oh, Alex, come here. Let me show you how to make this. I don't know. Thank God I took down some notes. Because how do you think we got here? It was because your grandma told your mom, told your other grandma, this is how you cook this. You're going to tell me that means nothing? What are we living for? Life between the goals? Life between the goals is sitting down and having a good conversation over a table with people you love. And I know we're feeling it this week because it's Thanksgiving week if you're listening to this. We can't even do it that much right now because it's a safety hazard. Don't even get me started on the tech philosophy for how we got here with this pandemic. What are y'all living for? If it's not to taste amazing food with your family. What are we doing here? So that's my whole thing, and that's why I have a real problem with ageism. We want to talk about sexism. We want to talk about racism. We need to start talking about ageism because it is ugly up in here. The way that we treat older people as if they have no feelings, as if they don't have all the keys that we're missing, in my opinion. This is my opinion at this point. What are we going to do? Why are you asking Zuckerberg? You need to be asking Iyanla. You need to be calling your grandma and say, what do we do? Because they have had enough life experience, not necessarily to know all the answers, but having that layer gives wisdom, gives depth. And this is why in that presentation, I talk about prefigurative learning and postfigurative. I'm forgetting if those are the exact terms, but the point is that you can learn in society one of two ways. Either the elders are teaching the younger ones how to survive and how to navigate, or the younger ones have to teach the elders. And we go so fast with this technology, so abrasive for what? I don't know. That we have to teach our elders how to do any damn thing. And as if we're not going to be outdated from this technology too. We're going to have a real problem when we get the same treatment that we give our elders. That video, I don't know if y'all saw, of Maya Angelou, and someone's talking to her, and they call her Maya, and she says, my name is Mrs. Angelou, and this is whole thing, and, you know, why this formality? Damn, relax. And then you get older, and you realize why there's that formality, because formality is an expression of respect. It's an expression of respecting where someone is at and what they've been through. But when you live in a prefigurative culture, it is almost insulting that someone older thinks that they know more than you. Because why? Because you know how to navigate whatever new iPhone came out and they don't. What kind of society does that? Every other tradition, every other culture that had harmony, they always valued the elders. That's the last grasp you have on wisdom of how to live. I'm not saying they're always right. I'm not saying they're perfect. Absolutely not. But I'm saying that they have illuminating knowledge. And it breaks my heart to see how we treat them. And it's going to break our hearts when we get treated that way. So home is where the heart is. Homemaking is an art that I want to preserve in the name of my grandmothers who made sure they preserved it. And I want to leave with two quotes. One of them is a very profound, this is, in my opinion, probably my top three favorite quotes, very profound, but see, it does not have the same weight without all this context. So I often get asked, like, oh, Alex, what's your, like, quote? What's your favorite quote? And it's like, I can't tell you, because you need to, we need to have a conversation first. That's how good, deep quotes, the best quotes, are not necessarily quotes. They're cherries on top of conversations, contextual conversations. C.S. Lewis, homemaking is surely in reality the most important work in the world. What do ships, railways, mines, cars, government, etc. exist for except that people may be fed, warmed, and safe in their own homes? The homemaker's job is one for which all others exist. Woo, Lord. And you want to sit here and tell me, is it not true? Oh, you hate society? Oh, you hate how men act? You hate how young people act? Well, where do you think it starts? The second quote is something I wrote right after my grandma passed. I'll probably break it down a little bit, but I say, homemaking is not the same thing as housekeeping, though both are important. Housekeeping is about keeping a space clean, and homemaking is about making a place special. You know you've been in a home before. You know the warmth they have. You know that there's always a blanket to wrap yourself and a clean towel to use. You know there's always some delicious food to eat and a relaxing place to read. You know that inside of it there is a gracious person, maybe a few, who love you dearly and want to hear what is new in your life. I love us millennials, but our culture has made homemaking a dying art. If we don't preserve the customs of our grandparents that they've taught us, they will die when our grandparents die. I want to encourage people who can find the value in preserving it, because it's more important than it seems. Homemaking is the backbone of what society is built on. Broken homes, meaning abuse, miscommunication, love with conditions, make broken people. Broken people make broken worlds. We become humans by the condition of love, stability, and nurture available in the home. This does not take much money. Homes have been a part of humanity before the abundance of running water or electricity. They don't require anything fancy, just an open heart and a willingness to love and nurture. Yeah, so that is what I want to leave with here. As you can see, you know, I'm very passionate about this. And that is that. I am very excited to hear what you have to say. Please tweet me, Instagram me, say what's up. I really appreciate your listenership. And I want to keep this kind of conversation going. This was, I think, the beginning, just laying down why this is important to begin with. But there's a reason why I'm releasing these episode topics the way I am, because sometimes to say the one sentence, like I said, sometimes I could say this in one sentence, but we have to break it down into several conversations. And with that being said, I hope that you have a great rest of your evening. Relaxing, comfortable, warm, and that you understand how valuable it is to have that in our world. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And if you aren't already, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more resources on innovation, economics, and culture, visit alexwolf.co/newsletter and sign up for my email list. Thanks!